to another exciting edition of the That's So Cincinnati podcast. I'm your host, Bro Love, editor of the Cincinnati Enquirer, with not one, but two co-hosts today. We have Scott Wortman. This is your second time,
this
right?
This is exciting. I'm a veteran.
Back in the studio, Scott Wortman, who had previously covered all things Hamilton County, including the banks and the stadium developments, and our new Hamilton County reporter, since Scott's now covering the city, Aaron Glenn, who you must be drinking out of a fire hose right now, right?
It's exciting. There's a lot going on.
I know there's a lot going on. And speaking of what's going on, our special guest on the podcast today is the now former Special Projects Counsel, the outside lawyer for Hamilton County, Tom Gabelman, who handled all things banks development, stadium development, almost from the start. He was, I would say, relieved of his duties last week. That came as a surprise to him. It came as a surprise to many observers, since he was in a pivotal spot as the county and the Bengals are approaching this deadline for a new lease agreement. So we're going to debrief Tom Gabelman. But before we do that, we have to get our listeners kind of up to speed on all that happened last week, where we are with these negotiations. So I thought, like, who better to have this conversation with than Scott, who just dumped everything on Aaron's lap.
Enjoy.
So, Scott, let's start with you. How would you describe to just an average person who doesn't follow this as closely as we do, but has seen the headlines and might have, you know, raised their eyebrows, like, what do you mean the county fired its lead attorney in this project here? What's happening?
Well, buckle up, because it's 30 years of history. So begins in 1995. It is something that in most government situations, this would be very inside baseball-y, but this is a stadium, and it's an NFL stadium, which raises the stakes considerably. But Tom Gabelman, who's been the county's point person on the Paycor, well, what was Paul Brown Stadium, and it survived many changes with the team, the county, was summarily fired by the county recently. So what questions, where do you want me to begin? I don't even know where to begin on it.
So, well, this is, so
why should people care?
Yeah, why should people care? And this question is for both you and Aaron, is what do you think this signals in terms of where this negotiation might end?
Well, I mean, I would start why you should care. It kind of shows where the negotiations are at between the county and the Bengals. Because, I mean, at this point, neither the county or the Bengals are going to be too forthcoming. And what they are forthcoming with, it's from their own perspective. They have their own axes to grind. So this kind of just shows at this point, you know, how the negotiations are going. And it definitely seems like neither side is satisfied. And it shows kind of why the public should care. I mean, this is one of the most visible landmarks in the city. And the Bengals are one of the biggest institutions, for better or worse, in the community. So this kind of shows where this very important project is right now.
So, Aaron, you're new to the beat. I joked you're drinking out of the fire hose. There's a lot going on. What have you, as far as where you think this is heading, how's this guiding your reporting? Like, what are the questions that you're seeking answers to? Where do you think, you know, what do you think we need to know about this?
Well, so there's not a lot of time to get a deal done, first of all. The Bengals have until June 30th to extend their current lease, although they could sign on to another memorandum and extend that deadline. I think the switch in lawyers kind of shows how unsatisfied the county was with where the negotiations are now. The Bengals have said that it's a sign that the county is not serious to change lawyers so soon to a deadline. And the county said, no, this is us getting serious. This is us trying to get a deal done.
And I will say, having spent the better part of the last decade covering county politics, the stadium issue has always been the number one issue here from taxpayers, from, I mean, just because the NFL is, and the Bengals are, I mean, you know, people love the NFL and the Bengals, and this is like front and center has been the biggest issue.
We love the Bengals as, you know, a team, you know, I think Joe Burrow is probably one of the most, you know, sought after celebrities in terms of what is he doing and what is he wearing? And oh my gosh, he showed up at the Met Gala and all these things. We're like, we have never been more fixated on the Bengals. We're coming off a Super Bowl appearance in what, 2023, the 2022 season. But on the other side of the coin, taxpayers in Hamilton County have said, you know, enough. This was one of the most lopsided stadium deals in the NFL. That it's time, you know, as the 25 years, things have changed. You know, the NFL has seen its revenue explode. The Bengals are valued at, what, $4 billion now compared to, what, less than $500 million when this original lease happened. And so whether you listen to Alicia Reese, who's probably the most vocal about it in terms of the Bengals have to pay their fair share, you've got Hamilton County Commission President Denise Driehaus sort of threading the needle a little more carefully than Alicia has been. But they all, I think, need to come out of this negotiation with, you know, without the dubious label of worst deal, worst NFL deal ever. You know, they have to come out with something different. Are the Bengals willing to take that step, do you think? And is that why maybe there was a shift in legal representation, that they wanted a, you know, a tougher negotiator or someone without the baggage that Gableman had?
Well, I think that's why the county brought in David Abrams with Inner Circle Sports to kind of give some context on how these deals work across the country. Which the Bengals were not happy with. I mean, they expressed a few weeks ago that they don't like the idea that a former Inner Circle Sports consultant used to consult with the Cleveland Browns. But I think the county is trying to get more information about how deals nationally, stadium deals nationally are going, and how they can get a better deal for Cincinnati specifically.
And one thing they've been very vocal about and clear on, while there's a lot that gets lost in the noise, is they want more people, more groups to buy into the whatever needs to be done, the Paycor, and not have it 90% on Hamilton County and the half-cent sales tax. So they want more from the NFL, they want more from the state, they want more from the Bengals to pay for. I believe Denise Driehaus has said 1/3 from the Bengals and the state to pay for the upgrades to the stadium. So, I mean, I think the county wants to walk away from the table with at least more money from other sources.
And the Bengals have a sweet deal now. I'm sure that they are interested in extending it and keeping the current kind of
If you're the Bengals
going,
why change things? You've got a great deal. You know, the Bengals ownership is a little different. We mentioned the Browns and Haslam. You know, that ownership in talking about Haslam, he's got other things going on. He's got, you know, the Flying J truck stops and all of that stuff. Like, he was an established, you know, wealthy business owner prior to being involved with the Cleveland Browns. The Bengals ownership is a little different. This is really all they have going. They're not in a position to leverage a lot of other assets. This is their asset. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that they have concerns of how this might pencil out with a new lease. If you were to predict, as we sit here now, a few days away from June, what the next major development in this story is going to be, what would you predict? I'll go to Scott first.
Am I allowed to make a prediction?
You are allowed. This is a podcast, yes, man. You can shed your objective reporter skin.
Here's how it's going down. I mean, this is. I think this is actually not too controversial, because the Bengals have the option to extend the lease another 2 years, which would be the current terms of the lease. I could definitely see, because we're not going to know what the state is willing to do until like the actual deadline, June 30th. That's when the budget has to be passed, and that's going to go down to the wire. So I could definitely see the Bengals extending the lease another 2 years. They're going to continue negotiating. There's going to be a lot of brinksmanship on both sides, like any negotiation will be. It'll look pretty nasty. And then I think there will be probably then a deal announced at the last minute sometime next year.
All right.
That would be my guess.
All right. We'll see if that comes true. Aaron, do you have any idea? You're new to the beat. You're still soaking this all in.
I would predict that we get another memorandum agreement that gives the Bengals more time. I think that I think Scott's right that they will extend the current lease by 2 years, but I think that they'll want to see what they can get from the state before they do that. So I don't think we'll see the extension by June
30th. Do you think they'll have an idea what they'll get from the state at that point?
I don't know.
They'll have a promise. They might have some lawmakers say, you know, we will support this, but it won't be guaranteed.
I don't think it looks good for them to get state funding. I mean, we saw how the state reacted to the economic impact study for the Browns stadium and said the state commissioned its own report and kind of said, like, well, these economic impact studies are always a little too rosy. We don't see that having that great of an impact. And then we know Senator Blessing has said that he doesn't want to use money from the general fund for any stadium projects.
Mm-hmm. So. All right. I'm going to be contrarian just because I can. Ooh. Here's my prediction. The county has painted themselves into a corner right now by making that change in representation. And so to save face, and so to not have people like Gableman and others say, I told you so, they're going to do whatever they can to land this thing down and announce, you know, before June 30th that they have a new lease agreement. That's my prediction. Mm-hmm. That because of these, you know, 11th hour, you know, 2 minute warning, let's go back to the football comparisons. The 2 minute, we're in the 2 minute warning right now, right? Because of this bold move they made, they almost have to save face, land a deal and not kick it down the road 2 years.
Do you think they'll get, who's going to pay for the $830 million that they say needs? Do you think it'll still be mostly the county?
I think that the details will be a little fluid, mm-hmm. and they have the state legislature and the budget process and their request kind of the variable here. But if they can get some kind of assurance that there's some level of, public funding that's not Hamilton County, that there's no reason not to do this. But now they have, in terms of their reputation, I think it just sends a bad message if they're forced to, go extend the lease 2 years. Because I think they want to send the message, whether it's Connie Pillich or whether it's Jeff Aluto, the county administrator, that they have their act together.
You know, and that's a good point. I will give you credit on, an agreement can be whatever they say it will be. So there could be a ton of caveats and non-binding stuff, but they can say it's an agreement.
Right.
So who knows? Yeah.
I hope that comes true because that would be more fun to write about.
It would, and I hope that, once the preseason starts, we can focus on like the football team and not the politics and the negotiations. Is that too much to ask for Cincinnati?
Yes.
Yeah. This is why we can't have nice things, Scott. All right. Well, thank you for setting us up. We're going to now bring on our special guest today, Tom Gableman.
I got plenty more predictions.
Special guest time on That's So Cincinnati. We have with us, as promised, the former project counsel for Hamilton County in all things riverfront development, Tom Gableman. Welcome to That's So Cincinnati.
Thank you, Burl. I appreciate being on and look forward to talking to your listeners and having a conversation today.
So have you been a podcast guest before, or is this the first?
No, I have not.
All right. Well, welcome, and we thank you for joining us. So You have been in the headlines as of late. The county decided to go in a different direction in terms of who they have representing them as outside counsel. And but I wanted to go back to the beginning, because a lot of people, they probably don't understand the role that the Hamilton County prosecutor has in this. We think of the Hamilton County prosecutor as someone involved in crimes in courts, but they are actually the chief legal officer for the county, and they're involved in hiring outside counsel for all kinds of situations. And that's the role you played. Can you take us back to when you started representing the county, and what was the job they hired you to do?
Sure, Burl. So way back in the summer of 1997, we were retained by Hamilton County, and we had made a presentation to be their project counsel on the development and design and construction of Paycor Stadium. Well, it was Paul Brown Stadium back then. But they believed that they had sufficient counsel to do that. So they retained us to do title searches, because there were over 400 parcels on the riverfront that all needed to be consolidated and so on. So we said, fine, we'll do that work for you. This was about 2 months after the county and the Bengals had entered into a lease to develop the stadium. The county hired, as you mentioned, the county prosecutor serves as a chief lawyer to the county board. But they brought in outside counsel from Chicago, who basically negotiated that lease with the prosecutor's office. And basically following that, and we were doing our work just in terms of all the land acquisition. And the first deal that we got involved in that was really substantive in nature was the Castellini company had about 35 acres on the riverfront. And the county administrator at that time, David Krings, and the prosecutor, assistant prosecutor, Roger Friedman, had trouble getting that deal closed, and they were working at it for 6 months. We were brought in with basically a week left, because you got to get all the land assembled and under the control of the county in order to advance the construction of the stadium, because the stadium had moved basically from being built right next to the suspension bridge where the old stadium was to the far west of town where it is now. So we were brought in, Burl, and we took the purchase and sale agreement and basically tore that up and started over. And within 1 week, we came to terms with the Castellini company. The transaction closed before the end of the year. And we had the first 35 acres necessary to advance the stadium. And that was our first work, what I would call substantive work. You know, title search is great, but actually advancing something like that. And the interesting thing about that, we did it for less in terms of the price per acre than they had three other law firms that were involved acquiring land. And we did it for less than what they had in terms of the purchase price per acre, as well as the cost in terms of our services.
So just to establish the timeline, this occurred after the half-cent sales tax vote, after the county entered into the lease agreement. So you came along after all of that. Like,
correct.
The deal, yep. The infamous deal was done. You were just hired to land it.
Right, to land it and to advance the construction of the stadium. But so it didn't, and so I mentioned the 35 acres that were under the Castellini company control. And then you go move forward into January of 1998, and the Bengals and the owner, you know, at that time as now, it was Mike Brown. And Mike Brown had set a deadline that was hard and fast, that the county had to have everything in place by January 31st of 1998 in terms of basically all of the remaining land, because the city of Cincinnati had 12 and a half acres that literally ran through the 50-yard line of the new stadium. Norfolk Southern had a property interest that ran through basically, I think it was the 30-yard line of the stadium. And then the old CNOTP, which was a railway, as you know, that's subject to the large sale that occurred last year, also had a property interest. So basically, this was another one where, I'm not kidding, we were brought in on a Friday before the January 31st deadline, 1 week before, presented with the Bengals lease, which I had not seen before, and said, we basically need to get modifications to this Bengals lease. We need to get an agreement with the city. We need to get an agreement with the Bengals, Norfolk Southern, and the CNOTP Railway. And the deadline is January 31st, 1998, 1 week. And all of that was necessary in order for not just the stadium to be built, but the entire riverfront redevelopment. So setting context from where we started from, you had Riverfront Stadium sitting there that had not been properly maintained, was in horrible disrepair, and basically it had to be imploded 32 years after it's built. That is not good. But in any event, we had a 1 week charge. We worked around the clock that weekend, all of the following week. We had multiple meetings with the city, the Bengals, the railroads, and we go into Friday, and the deadline is the following evening. We go into Friday, and at 5 o'clock in the morning, I'd gotten home at 3 in the morning. At 5 o'clock in the morning, I'm back in the office. And I'll just tell you, just to close that piece out, I didn't get home until 4 o'clock in the morning on Sunday. But here's what we did. We got the agreement done with the city of Cincinnati. We got the agreement done with the Bengals. The railroads got done the earliest at 10 o'clock on Saturday night. And we're going into this midnight deadline. And many people will remember, Todd Fortune was a council member there, and we were running behind. So he moved the clock from midnight to 1 a.m. in order to give us more time.
You know, I remember that. I remember the photo. You know, time is relative, right? Does anyone really know what time it is? So Todd Fortune, a man of many talents, shifted the time space compendium and yeah, I do remember that. And I had forgotten about it till you brought it up. I think that would go down as one of the classic moments of this whole saga, don't you?
Well, absolutely. And I tell you what, we on the county side negotiated for 48 hours straight. There were only two attorneys, myself, and I had a legal assistant at that time, Margaret Grossman, and on the Taft side, who was representing the Bengals, Stuart Dornett, we did not sleep for 48 hours, and we were going back and forth all night long, exchanging drafts, modifying things. We took the final version of this, and it's the first redevelopment agreement ever between the city and the county to do that riverfront. We took it to the county at 11 o'clock. The county passed it unanimously. We then went to the city, and we got there, Burl, at midnight. And I never forget, Councilman Winburn said, we got to review this document, make sure all the T's are crossed and I's dotted. And I thought, oh my God, we're going to be here all night. And sure enough, it was debated. I presented, I was up on my feet for 2 hours, walking through every provision along with the city solicitor, Ely Ryder. At 3:30 in the morning, they passed the redevelopment agreement. John Shirey, who was the city manager at the time, walked out and said, Tom, great job. That's awesome. We got everything done. I'll see you on Monday. And I said, no, John, we need the deed from the city now. And he goes, well, we'll get that on Monday. I'm like, nope, I'm not walking out without the deed to the property. And so at 3:30 in the morning, he signed it. I walked out with it and went home. And, you know, my wife, Carol, at the time, you know, we had three kids at home. She's like, I can't believe, you know. Of course, I hadn't had a shower also since Friday. So, you know, it was not the greatest. But anyway, we got it done. And you know what, Burl? That's what started the redevelopment. That's what started it. There were so many times. I'll tell you, Councilman Fortune came over to our offices on that Saturday, and he wanted to get involved in the negotiation. And I met him down in the office lobby, and I said, Todd, and I was classmates with him in law school. He was 1 year ahead. I said, Todd, no politicians. We will get this done. This is our charge. We will get it done. And we got it done. and that became, I will say that, that became precedent setting for almost every single deal, Burl, that we had to do from the beginning all the way through the last deal that we just did with the county and Bengals in late April of this year.
You're talking about the MOU?
That was the MOU. And, you know, just to give people context. So you've got 120 acres on that riverfront, all 120 acres over the last 25 years has been excavated and moved and changed all within the 25-year period, which, and we've looked at developments all around the country, nothing like this of this scale and magnitude has happened. But it started in 98. Fast forward, you know, Paycor Stadium opens, or Paul Brown Stadium opens. The ballpark opens in 03, the Freedom Center in 04. But then we sat. Three major developments, and they became what I would call destination malls, right? People just go to the mall and they leave. People go to the ballpark, the stadium, and then they leave. And we knew we had to advance the development because otherwise you're not going to have a thriving riverfront. And in 2008, same thing, Burl. We had to work around the clock with the developer. We're trying to do it in the middle of a recession, the worst recession since, you know, the Great Depression. And we're trying to pull a development out of the ground in a tier three media market. And everybody's saying, you're crazy. You can't do it. But we did, right? We started it. And there was even an article in the New York Times about what's going on in Cincinnati. The Great American Tower is going up. Who's building office buildings in the middle of the recession? And we have this development on the riverfront that's advancing. That is because you hit back then, what I credit with, which you've got to have, you got to have people doing all the substantive work. That's what we do. We just do all the substantive work to advance it. All the glory, all the credit goes to those political leaders who have to exercise political will to get something accomplished. And that, the banks, got passed with a unanimous vote. It was the first ever joint city-county meeting at the Freedom Center. I'm trying to think the hall. We were between the halls of justice. I can't remember the other one. Anyway, we're there, Freedom Center, first ever joint city-county meeting in its entire history of the two entities, and we approved the banks unanimously. And look where we are 17 years later.
So let's jump fast forward to where we are now. I want to go back to, like, you know, it's not just about the stadium, although that's, you know, where everybody's focused on now as the lease with the Bengals is set to expire. I do want to go back to the overall banks development. But yes. as we're heading now into this negotiation phase for a new lease, you're intimately involved. At this point, you have, you know, more than two decades of history, of institutional knowledge. You know where all the bodies are buried. You have worked with countless, at this point, elected leaders because they turn over. You've sort of been one of the constant threads through, you know, to where we are today. And then, you know, we have a very consequential election at the prosecutor's office. It's the first time a Democrat has had that role in a very long time. You know, shifting of ideas, shifting of, you know, public opinion on what is, you know, the fair share for the Bengals and what should taxpayers be expected to pay. You know, lots of changes through that period. You had been the constant, though. Did you anticipate that the county would decide to go a different direction in terms of their outside counsel? Did you see that coming?
I mean, it's always going to be in the back of your mind. Everything was governed, to me by four simple words, just doing the right thing. Doing the right thing has got to be the constant. And don't worry about the political parties, just because it's not political. This is, and very much so, I look at it because, you know, I am a native Cincinnatian. You know, I grew up not too far from you in Finneytown and North College Hill. And this was personal to me from the standpoint of being able to have an opportunity to really transform our riverfront. So no, I didn't expect that at all. And I thought that our record, which I'm happy to talk about, because I also learned early on, I'm working in the public eye. We have to document our return on investment. Yes, no one likes to pay attorney's fees. We understand that. But if I could demonstrate, and we could demonstrate, that when you pay a dollar, we're going to return that. First, it was fivefold, tenfold. Now, it's the return on investment in council. And I am not kidding. In 28 years, it's all documented. I've submitted to every media outlet. It's all documented. Has brought in over $1 billion to the county. Not an economic impact. I'm not even talking about that. I'm talking about real dollars saved, real dollars generated, real dollars in grant money that has been provided to the county and the city. We have done all that. And yes, when I look at the ratio, it was $26 million over 28 years. In that same time period, we bring in $1 billion. And that return on investment is close to 4,000%. I don't know another. I'll tell you about all the metrics and where the banks is today. And we are exceeding all expectations. But that one, you've got to have lawyers. You have to have design professionals. You got to have construction managers. And frankly, we are on point coordinating all of those along with the staff at the county to make all that happen. So no, I didn't expect it because we would submit periodic reports to the county. I just provided the most recent one last week. It said, look at the money that we have saved over the next through 2050. We're going to save the county $400 million in property taxes that they had been paying, and they get $25 million this year in refunds because we took an innovative approach. We've changed the law in Ohio as it relates to property taxes for the county, and it benefits the city, all villages, and all townships. And it's the right thing to do. That's our return on investment. And we were always saying, I know I've got a cost to justify it because, I mean, how many times have you seen it? Oh, you know, there they are. You know, Gableman's charging them $1 million a year. Well, yeah, a severely discounted rate that is probably a negative margin with my own firm. But I'm being very candid, Burl. We put public good over profit because we saw the change that had been happening and the change that continues to happen.
So what do you think changed?
It is a complete mystery to me to make that change, the change that was made at that point in time. You know, when you come to a negotiating table, it just doesn't start with, hey, okay, we've got a lease. It's been here since 1997. It's been pilloried in the community for since that time.
You were going to say the media, but that's fair.
here's the thing. We weren't involved in that first lease, but I was involved and my team was involved in every single lease modification with the Bengals starting 7 months after that lease was executed. And then we had multiple modifications of that lease over the next 25, 28 years. And every single time, and I'm saying this without equivocation, every single time, the Bengals accommodated the county taxpayers so that the riverfront development could be advanced. They changed that lease multiple times. A lot of the provisions that people looked at and said, this is offensive. Like, you know, the first lease said, hey, if we have more than, we only have 50,000 in attendance, then the county taxpayers pick up the 15,000 aren't sold. That came out in 2000. But we've made modifications to the development guidelines on behalf of the city, on behalf of the county that were significant. And then the last set of revisions, it's kind of, you put things in context. In 2018 and 2019, the level one enhancements and future enhancements, which were the ones that could have cost the county $250 to $300 million back in 2018 and 2019. And when I presented, basically, the county does not have the funds to do that. The Bengals listened, and they said, okay, we understand that. I presented the model, showed the substance. We can't do it. But by 2024 and 2025, we get closer in our model to being able to afford the renovation that we're now doing. The groundwork for that was in 2018. Again, the Bengals modified it. And let me tell you, they are tough negotiators. They're trying to protect their NFL franchise. They're trying to protect their competitiveness. When we're in a tier three media market. It's tough. It's tough to do. And that's what we arm wrestle. We arm wrestle over those things, but I'm always coming in protecting the county taxpayers and saying, we've got to get a deal that's fair and equitable. And you got to, you listen to me and I will tell you what my constraints are, what my interests are. I'm going to listen to you and I'll listen to your constraints and your interests. And by God, we will build a bridge to get this done. And that's what we are on the track to do.
Do you think that the perception is, though, that over the years, not just with the original deal, but it was almost like an unwinnable situation in terms of, you have things like the state of the art clause that requires the taxpayer, the county, to pay for stadium improvements. You have what you brought up, the question of whether, a market the size of Cincinnati can truly support an NFL team in the era of, TV contracts and how the NFL monetizes itself. It definitely makes it tough for mid-sized markets. Did you have, in the court of public opinion, did you even have a fair shot?
Oh, you know what? I think absolutely. And that is the path that we were on, because this, as I mentioned, this process to get where we were poised to basically have the deal done by June 1st. And June 1st, we set that deadline. The Bengals have a deadline of June 30th in their lease. They either renew it for 2 years or they give notice and say, we're out of here by July 1 of 2026. That's the reality. Knowing how important deadlines are to getting deals done, and I mentioned a few of those, there have been 10 major deadlines over the last 28 years, Burl. We hit every single deadline, but I knew from a public sector perspective, it's like you've got to have a deadline. Otherwise, it just keeps protracting and protracting. And time kills deals. I knew that. So I set the deadline of June 1st, and the Bengals said, okay. And I said, because we're going to get this done in advance of June 30th, because we're trying to get construction started in February of 26, and we only have a four-month window before the season starts every single year to get construction done. So, we rolled up our sleeves, and we weren't just meeting at the negotiating table in the last few months. This goes back years, where it's literally hundreds of hours, if not thousands of hours. And the first thing we did was the pre-renovation projects. Pre-renovation projects before the new lease, the Bengals were putting in $44 million. We committed to $40 million, but we brought ours in under budget by $6 million. Not bad savings on that. That was advanced. We then continued. We were meeting with the Bengals staff and their principals almost every day for a substantial period of time, and we're planning out the renovation, which does take months and years to do. And in that period of time, Burl, what we came together on, different from the first lease, the Bengals were willing to put in a substantial capital contribution to the renovation. That was point one. That didn't occur under the first lease, which the first lease was done on a market basis, very similar to what happened in Indianapolis, where the overwhelming 90%+ of the new construction costs in Indianapolis was borne by the taxpayers, similar to what happened here. we were shifting that whole dynamic by having the team contribute. And they understood what our constraints were in terms of the sales tax fund. They understood that. And we also understood we needed to find other funding, and we'll talk about the state funding in a second. And the other major paradigm shift that happened in our negotiations in the past few months, we moved the Bengals to saying they were willing to contribute to the maintenance and operation and capital repair of the stadium from revenues that they would derive, their revenues that they would derive from game day and other events, which was not the case in the original lease, you know? And so when you talk about the constant improvements and so on that was in the original lease, the Bengals didn't exercise those. They did not exercise any of those clauses that said, we have to be like every other stadium. What happened was there was only enough money put in by the county to maintain and operate it, and they did that top notch. Same way the ballpark is maintained in a top notch manner by the Red staff, and the same thing happens with respect to the Bengal Stadium. There's over 35 people at the Bengal Stadium that are managing basically the maintenance and operation, but that's paid for by the county taxpayers. Where we had moved the Bengals in our negotiation over the past few months, they were going to contribute to that. And we were coming up with innovative ways in which not only the renovation would occur, but also the ongoing maintenance and operation, because that is so critical. Now, having said all that, let me just tell you something also very significant. We presented a plan last September that said it's going to be $1.3 billion to renovate that stadium. That is in line with every other stadium renovation across the country. And frankly, for 2 years, I had thought it's going to be $800 million to $1.2 billion to do this, and it came in at $1.3. We sat down with the Bengals after that plan was presented, and they basically said, we want this to be stadium centric. We know we could do the state-of-the-art training complex that, you know, the LA Chargers just have done, or Jacksonville has just done, and that's $300 million. We'll put that on the back burner. You know, that's something that we may fund. You know, we didn't want them to go out to the burbs because that has an impact on the city earnings tax, which is very significant. But they said, let's put that on the back burner. There are other things outside the stadium, reconfiguring Marion Way and so on. Let's hold on that. Let's take care of this stadium. Let's improve the stadium. And we took out $500 million in the budget and moved it to $830 million. $500 million we took out. Now, if you look what happened in Nashville, you look at Buffalo, both are tearing down their stadiums. Tearing their stadium, and Cleveland wants to tear down their stadium.
Sounds like that's a done deal.
Yeah, it might not be. We'll see. That one has some drama too. But I think if you look at it, just not, you know, the Bengals could have sat back. And if you looked at the lease and said, well, the Bengals are going to ask for a new stadium too. Well, we know new stadiums because we had analyzed every single deal in all 32 teams across the NFL. We knew that was going to be north of $2 billion. And there was no funding path, no financing path that could get us to $2 billion. The Bengals recognize that. The county recognized that. So we saved at least $1 billion right off the bat by saying, we're going to sustain this 25-year-old stadium, and we're going to improve it, and it can last for decades. So that was our goal. Buffalo started with a stadium, a new stadium, $1.3 billion. They're now at $2.2 billion. They're $900 million over budget, and we're going in the other direction. We're saying, and there's not another one that's done that, Burl. Not another one has said in the NFL, yeah, it should be $1 billion. You know, in Miami, they've put in over $800 million. There's not another one that has moved in the other direction. But the Bengals said, we don't need all the bells and whistles that any NFL team is doing. Our demographic doesn't need that. We can't support it. We're here to play football, and that's what our fans want to see. But we need more public spaces, which is what we put into that budget with, you know, the whole north end zone gets completely redone. It gets completely interconnected with the rest of the stadium. A new club area that can be used for public spaces. The club lounges are being paid for by the Bengals because that's, you know, that's your premium ticket holder. And if you're the county taxpayer saying, hey, I want to do as much that as I can for the everyday fan, right? Well, the bank said, we're going to pay for that, and we're going to redo these suites that are for all the corporate guys and gals and stuff. We'll take that on, county. You don't have to fund that. That's another paradigm shift in what was going on in the deal that we were negotiating. So, no, we were driving to a fair and equitable deal that we could stand on a record and stand in front of the taxpayers and said, we have got a great deal. We've sustained an NFL franchise in our city, and it's moving forward. And we did it in such a way that the expenses were being shared between the county taxpayers and the Bengals. And the revenues were being shared between the county taxpayers and the Bengals. That's a paradigm shift from where we were in 1997.
So in the time we have remaining, help me understand why everything you said wasn't taken into account before the decision to change legal representation.
I have absolutely no idea, Earl, and I asked repeatedly. There were no conversations. You know, I within the last year and a half, we probably have had 12 executive sessions, and that's how we meet with the board to advise them. And in none of those executive sessions did we ever hear, oh, well, I don't think you're going in the right direction, or there's some issue with performance. And that's what not one. And even on the day when I got the call an hour before a public meeting, I asked repeatedly, I said, we've been counsel for almost 30 years, and we've demonstrated our record. I said, look, I mentioned that return on investment. And then you look at what's happened on the banks. Before those voters in 1996, Burl, approved by a 62% margin, the vote to say, let's increase our sales taxes by a half cent. We projected that there would be about $566 million in construction, and it would have an economic impact of about $300 million a year to have those two stadiums and the infrastructure. You roll forward now 25 years, our annual economic impact is $2.5 billion every single year. The Bengals create $1 billion in economic impact. The Reds create $1 billion in economic impact. The projections back then were 175 and 225. It wasn't even close. And in the number of jobs, 8,000 jobs back then. Now we've tripled it. There are 26,000 jobs. And which is most significant is back then, in 2000, you'd have maybe 2 million visitors on that riverfront. Today, we have 6.5 million. We have looked at every single major urban redevelopment borough across this country, and not one can match us. You can go to Dallas. You can go to Charlotte. You can go to Austin. You can go to Miami, St. Louis, go to Kansas City. No one creates more than $1.5 billion in economic impact. We create $2.5 billion. That's a record of success. And that was driven by somebody who grew up in this town, was passionate about the riverfront, and saw the transformation that was occurring, and did that with honor and integrity from day one, and worked around the clock. And I'll just tell you, my kids grew up with dad being on the phone. You know, back then we had Nextel walkie-talkies, and the ballpark was being built. And whether we were on vacation in Michigan or Thanksgiving or Christmas, that walkie-talkie would go off, and dad had to take the call. So there's no question about the communications. Unfortunately, they saw and heard too much of that. But it was a matter of dedication. And just like you, Burl, I know you care about this town. I know you do. And I do too. And that's why I was so passionate about it. And I am stunned by what has happened. But I will say this. I am very optimistic. I think we left the county well positioned to get a deal done with the Bengals. They should get a deal done with the Bengals because we had 90% of it done. And we were driving to meet that June 1 deadline, which is this coming Sunday. And under our tenure, under our watch, Not one deadline was ever missed. And we put him in the right position to do it.
Do you think that June 1 deadline is still in play?
It has to be in play. It has to be in play.
Well, I mean, technically, they have till the end of, they have till June 30th.
They have until June 30th to have a complete deal in place. We set June 1 as a deadline. Now, here's part of that. At any point after June 1, either the county or the team can basically pull the plug. We built in a safety valve that said, okay, because we're advancing dollars. The county is advancing dollars for replacing the escalators and elevators and stairs that are 25 years old, that have had a lot of issues. You have to basically have that designed and engineered and procured now in order to put it in February and get it operating by July. And the same thing with the Bengals. They're redoing over 120,000 square feet of the East and West Club lounges and the suites. You've got to, all that is moving forward. And I'll say the last piece, we brought in a global leader in design and engineering construction with AECOM Hunt, joined with Messer to advance this renovation plan. We brought the best in class to advance this renovation plan. And they were meeting. They were meeting on the day that we were terminated. And after we were terminated, I went back down to the stadium because those were the people that we had brought together. They came from all over the country to basically advance what we were going to do over the next 3 years. No, this should be done. There's no reason a deadline can't be missed. If you're going to replace council, then they better be working around the clock because that was our standard. We work around the clock, and we got it done every single time.
All right. Well, Tom, I want to thank you for taking the time to walk us through all of that. And just to wrap things up, after the county, in your words, terminated your firm, you resigned from the firm. You're taking some time to focus on health. I just wanted to check in with you on a personal level. How are you doing? How are you feeling? And are you, I know, even though you just spent the last 45 minutes talking to us, have you been able to kind of take a step back?
Yes. I mean, I have been, although as you can tell, it's still very much on my mind because I've been so committed to it for such, you know, a long period of time. And, my whole health status, and this is my second bout with cancer. And, I beat it the first time. I was confident I could beat it the second time. I kept it very close to the vest. My kids didn't know for months because I felt like, if they did, they would pressure me to slow down. And in the past few months, you know, my doctors have been saying, you should be doing 25 to 30 hours a week, not, you know, 80 to 100 hours a week. And I said, I know, but I'm going to get this done. And then, you know, all will be good. But you know, I've been up here for a few days and, it's extremely peaceful. I've been able to catch up on a lot of sleep.
Up here is in Michigan. And I think we can hear the birds chirping in the background, too.
Right.
It added something to the podcast. I appreciate that.
The only way to get the Elon Musk internet, Starlink, went down. So the only way I can get Verizon is outside, basically. So anyway, so we're up in northern Michigan, and we've been coming up here for almost, you know, 30 years since our kids were little. So.
Well, Tom, again, thank you for spending the time with us. I think it's important for, you know, people are fixated on what's happening now, but understanding how we got here is super important. I can't think of anyone else better to walk us through that. So thank you for spending the time with us.
Well, thank you, Burl, and I definitely appreciate you taking the time to walk through those kinds of details. I hope they're helpful to provide context and understanding. And I will say this, Hamilton County and the city of Cincinnati and all those stakeholders on the riverfront, you know, the Jim Moorings of the world, should be proud of what has been done. And but for those stadiums, they were the catalyst. You know, and so Mike Brown being willing to make the investment, Bob Castellini in the same year that he takes over the Reds, which is no small charge in running his company, he takes over the bank steering committee. And he was the 800-pound gorilla that basically said, okay, all politics, get out of what we're doing. We're going to focus on getting the deal done. And that's what it took, Burl. It putting the politics aside, we will come in and present a plan for you that will transform that riverfront, and it's done. And we're still not finished, right? It's still not finished. But Cincinnati and Hamilton County, instead of like beating themselves up, should take pride in what we have on that riverfront. People should go down there. I mean, it's an amazing place to be. And we're lucky to have it. So it's like, count our blessings because it's worked. It really has.
Well, on that note, Tom, once again, thank you. And we wish you all the best.
All right. Thank you, Burl.
Well, there you have it. We heard right from the horse's mouth, Tom Gabelman, of where we are, where he thinks things are going to go. And Scott, Aaron, the thing that I think I took away, two things. One is, he feels negotiations are 90% there. And also, to his critics who say he bills too much or he has gotten too close to the Bengals, he made it clear that he and his firm, which is Frost Brown Todd, have always put the public good over their profit. Do you think people will buy that?
I think there are a fair amount of cynics out there that probably would be skeptical as far as law firms and motives, but I don't know. I can't speak for the public.
And Aaron, what do you think? Let me ask you, as you've jumped into this story, do you think he might be a scapegoat?
I mean, that's definitely possible. It seemed like seemed like a lot of positive attention from the public just based on Facebook comments and people talking about our stories that they were kind of excited by this new change in direction. And it's possible that he was thrown under the bus for that positive attention. I'm not sure.
I mean, politics are not for the faint of heart.
Can't take the politics out of politics.
And what a run. I mean, as we heard him say, he's outlasted quite a few administrators, elected officials. Anyway,
that's what made this so surprising, because there have been so many changes over 28 years that he's been handling this project. So it's kind of like, you know, why now?
Right. Okay. Well, to wrap things up, I have to ask both of you. I mean, we're coming off of Memorial Day weekend. That means it's Taste of Cincinnati time. Did you go to the Taste, Aaron?
I did. I had a very Cincinnati weekend. Yeah. I stopped at the Roebling Point coffee shop. I got a matcha. I walked across the Roebling Bridge, went to Taste, tried some dumplings. It was great.
And I had a very Cincinnati weekend by avoiding the Taste of Cincinnati and avoiding crowds. And
that is a Cincinnati thing, you know? Like, we don't all have to go to the Taste of Cincinnati, right?
And you got to find parking. Wow. Hold your food while you're eating.
I recently moved back, so I'm back in the glow of all things Cincinnati. You
know? So, what was your favorite thing you had, Aaron?
I had momos from the Bridges Nepali restaurant. They were delicious.
Yeah, that is what my wife Lauren was all about.
Oh, yeah.
And I tried it, and it was fantastic.
They're great.
Wouldn't have been my go-to, but I'm glad that got a taste of that. It was probably the most colorful thing I ate, too.
Oh, yeah. It's a great street food, too, because they're, packaged.
It is a great street food. I did burn the roof of my mouth a little bit, oh, though. No. Yeah.
See, I avoided all that risk and pain.
So I wandered down to the food truck area, and my favorite thing I had was there's this truck and catering place called Wicked Hickory. Mm. They smoke everything, their meats, And, me being Greek, I'm all about lamb, right? But the traditional Greek way to prepare it is with oregano and lemon and garlic, okay. On a spit, if you can, open fire kind of thing. But they did smoked lamb, which I got to say, I've never really had before. So they had a smoked lamb fries with this, great spicy sauce. And, I can't go back on my heritage and say that smoked lamb is better than Greek style lamb. I would never say that, but it's a strong second.
Sounds delicious.
Yeah. And, it's just fun going down there. You run into a bunch of people, not you.
Nope.
But yeah, there are definitely, I would say you guys epitomize the kind of two vibes that people have when it comes to big city events. It's like, I'm all in, I got to go. And nope, avoiding it at all costs. Did you do, Scott?
Well, actually, I did go over the Rhine and met some friends at Bakersfield. And so, I did right. enjoy
there
the city.
Go. Yeah.
I just avoided the festival part of it. So,
gotcha. Well, Scott, I think Aaron and I are going to drag you to taste next year.
I've been there before.
Kicking and screaming. We're going to make you have fun.
I grew up here. I know what it's all about and everything. So it's like I can handle it. I just choose not to.
All right. And on that note, let's wrap things up. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the That's So Cincinnati podcast, a production of The Enquirer and Cincinnati.com.
And if you enjoyed the podcast, please give us a rating and share it with a friend who loves all things Cincinnati.
Finally, if you value local journalism, Scott, do you value local journalism?
Oh, totally. I love it.
So if you're like Scott and value local journalism and perhaps not street festivals and haven't subscribed for full digital access to Cincinnati.com, now's a great time. Just go to Cincinnati.com and click on the subscribe button to see a special offer just for you.
Thanks again, and we'll see you next week.